So we've been in the series called RAW, and RAW stands for Relationships Are Work. In order to talk about relationships, we have to get raw with each other, and we have to be open and transparent. So we've been looking at relationships. What we've said is that every meaningful relationship in life requires work in order to grow, in order to develop, in order to move forward, that you have to invest in the relationship. And we've looked at a few particular relationships, our relationship with God, our relationship with our significant other last week, spouse. And today we're going to talk about what does it mean in our relationship with our children. Now, I want to say, if you are a parent here or not a parent or a parent whose kids have gone, that the principles I'm going to teach today, I believe, are across the board, because you are investing in someone who's coming behind you at some level. It may be your children, it may be grandchildren, it may be a niece or a nephew, it may be some significant person in your life that has kids, but regardless of what stage of life you're in, even if you're a single adult, you're investing in someone that's coming along the path. So I want you to take the principles we're going to teach today and talk about today and apply them to your life context. Now, parenting is a number of things. One, parenting is extremely important, right? We can all agree that parenting is important. It's perhaps the world's greatest undertaking. If you are a parent, you are shaping kids. Wow. If you're a parent, you are shaping another generation. You are shaping your kids. And kids are too valuable not to work at it. They're too valuable. They're too important not to work at it. I mean, I don't need to emphasize this. We have seen this played out this week, haven't we? The taking of innocent lives, of kids' lives. Like, I don't care where you sit on either side of the table. I don't care what side of the issue you're on. This whole discussion that's going on in the United States. What I do know is that each of us recognize the value of children. Like, it doesn't matter what your position is on all the other peripheral things that are going on, we value kids, don't we? Like, there's something in our heart that when that happens, there's tragedy, because kids are too important. They're too valuable. It's important to be a parent. So parenting is important. Parenting is difficult. Very difficult. Before I had kids, I had four theories on what it means to be a great parent. Now I have four kids, and I have no theories on what it means to be a great parent. As a matter of fact, I don't have a clue what it means to be a great parent. Are you with me? Like, I heard about this professional speaker that used to go around the country and give talks about parenting, about how to raise kids. He would give lectures, and his lecture started out before he had kids, 10 commands on parenting. And then he had a child. And he changed the name of his lecture to 10 Hints About Being a Good Parent. And then he had another child. And he changed the name of his lecture to 10 Suggestions on How to Be a Good Parent. And then he had another kid. And he stopped lecturing. Because parenting is difficult. It's extremely difficult. Here's what I learned. Kids don't come with instructions. There's no assembly required manual when it comes to kids. Now, don't get me wrong. When you have kids, you will be needing assembly required manuals based on the toys that you have to put together as a parent. But what I find ironic is all these toys that come with assembly required, I don't need assembly required so much for the toys. I need it for the kid, right? Like, I need instruction manuals for the kid, but they don't come with that. Children don't come with that. Now, I had this idea before I became a parent that I would be a perfect parent with perfect kids. Here's what no one gave me a heads up on, or maybe they did and I just didn't listen. No one gave me a heads up that my kids would have physical problems. This week, Levi's been battling a little bit of, we'll just be polite here and say, constipation. And he's had an extremely difficult time. And we found ourselves this week with Levi screaming at the top of his lungs, unlike he has at any moment in his life. Now, I have been a part of that with four kids. Ashley had not been a part of that before. Levi, as far as a baby. And so she realized in that moment that physical problems can be difficult. I will not embarrass my kids. Aren't you so surprised to hear me say that, knowing my history? I will not embarrass my kids by telling you, but one of my kids, when they were a newborn, had to have a surgery when they were just a few months old to kind of correct some reproductive issues going on in their little tiny body. And I'll never forget looking down on a three-month-old child with tubes coming out of them everywhere and how much I love that little one, thinking no one gave me a heads up on this. Like, I wasn't prepared. One of the beautiful days that we took Levi to the park this week, there's another family there, and they had a four-year-old that jumped out of the swing, like all of us have done before, and he landed wrong and broke his arm on the spot at the park this week, and the grandmother was there with him, and of course she goes into a panic, and she's not big enough to carry the kid, so I went over and picked the kid up to take him to the car, and his arm is like going a different direction than it should. And I thought in that moment, like, no one gives you a heads up on these things. Like, it made me sick to my stomach. Like, no one prepares you for the physical problems your kids will have. No one told me that my kids were not going to obey instantly when I told them something. I thought you tell them something, they obey. No one told me that instant obedience doesn't happen naturally. Just recently, Levi learned to do this. So when you tell him something, he's like, did you just shake your head no at me? Like, you forget, like, I'm the dad here. You're not. No one told me they were not going to obey instantly. No one told me they were going to act up in public places. Now, I saw kids act up in public places, and I thought in my mind, that will never be my kid. One of my most strategic moments in life is we had taken our kids out when they were six and under, all of them at the time. And here's where I knew that maybe it's just best to live indoors for the next 12 years, that the server came to the table and said, looked at Zach when he was just a little toddler and said, what size drink would you want, little man? And I looked at the server and said, what size drink would you like to clean up? Right? That's your, like, no one told you that. No one told you that your kids are going to have the meltdown in Target. Whether you want to, you will be that parent at some point that everybody's looking at saying, why can't they get their kid under control? It just happens, and no one told me that. No one told me my kids were going to get on my nerves at times. Have you ever been in that position where you're like looking for a reason to send your kids to their room, like making a mess behind them just so you can get them in their room for a while? No one told me, like, my kids are going to get on my nerves sometimes. No one told me how much my kids would fight with each other. Have you ever played the he, she, crossed the line game with your kids? Like, why are you angry? They got on my side of the seat or bed. No one told me my kids were going to fight. Parenting can be difficult, which means parenting can also be frustrating. Very frustrating. Especially the way we kind of treat kids now. I love the protection that, like, car seats bring and things like that. I didn't have car seats when I grew up, and, you know, I mean, it was like car seat was like this, right? That was my car seat. My parents were going to break rapidly. It was the old arm. That was not safe, by the way. That's not an argument for we survived, just get rid of car seats. I know we like to use that, but I like having car seats. I just wish that car seats weren't like, when I put my kid in, it wasn't like a Hannibal Lecter, you know, something. I feel like my kids are Hannibal Lecter the way they're bound up in a mouth gag and all these things with a car seat. And then, well, the clothing for today, right, can be extremely frustrating. Like onesies with the head this long. Remember the old Stretch Armstrong thing where you could stretch it out? I feel like all my kids are Stretch Armstrongs when I'm trying to get a onesie on them. Or get their feet in shoes, like cramming their little feet in shoes. Parenting can be so frustrating. How can I get my kid's head, which is this big, through this tiny little hole? Maybe it has more to do with the size of the Hudson kids' heads than it has to do with the size of the onesies. And then this is my favorite. No one told me that when Reagan was a tiny little girl that I would wake up in the middle of the night and she would be standing at my bed staring at me. Go to bed, Chucky! She's so quiet and innocent. Yeah. She almost got punched multiple times because it's like, wake up and someone's staring at you. Man, parenting can be frustrating. But here's the reality of parenting. It is so rewarding. Amidst the anger and the difficulty and the frustration and the worrying, nothing compares to it. Nothing compares to parenting. And even though they make me angry and frustrated and difficult, I love it. I love it. I love being a dad. I love being a parent. I never knew that I could love something so little, so much. That's what parenting is all about. They make you smile, they make you scream, they make you laugh, they make you cry, they make you curse, they make you beam with pride. The psalmist said it this way in Psalm 127, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them." Parenting is very rewarding. But here's the deal with parenting. You learn as you go. Nothing prepares you for it like you want to be prepared. You learn as you go. Nothing prepares you for the reality, the emotions of everything that goes with parenting. We thought that we would be really smart and, you know, get prepared for parenting, so we bought this series. It's actually a very helpful series that's called Preparation for Parenting. It's also called Baby Wise. Great studies and suggestions, and we followed the principles. But I've often laughed when I saw the name of that, like Preparation for Parenting. Are you kidding me? Like, there's nothing that prepares you for parenting. And sometimes I feel like I don't need a book called Baby Wise. I need like one of those idiots books like you see in the store, like Idiots for Parenting for Idiots kind of book. But nothing really prepares you for it. You just kind of learn as you go. You remember that moment when you realize, like, I'm responsible for this child? Like, I'm getting ready to take this child home, and it's dependent on me. That's a scary thought. And if I'm really honest with you, it's one that really never goes away. I kind of still feel that way. I kind of still feel like, man, there's so much at stake. I still feel it when I watch them sleep and they don't know I'm watching them sleep. I still feel it when I send them to school and don't know what's going on at school. I still feel it when the news is filled with headlines of kids dying innocently. I still feel it each and every day as I seek to navigate these waters that we call parenting. And I live with kind of this underlying, I don't want to call it anxiety, but that is maybe the best word. I live with this underlying anxiety. Will they grow up and just be normal people? Whatever that looks like, will they grow up and be adults that love Jesus and love their families and make good choices and marry the right person? Sometimes, if I'm really being honest, I just think, I hope my kids grow up and do not become a serial killer, right? I just want them to grow up and be normal people. And what am I doing to try to navigate those waters and help guide that? Do we have a home where kids want to be home, where they have fun, where they have positive memories, where our home is thriving, not just surviving? And I can tell you, speaking from firsthand experience, like many of you, you can multiply that by a million when you're in a situation of a divorce or different homes, right, or step-parents. Like, how do you navigate all those waters? Like, how do you encourage and support a parent that lives in another home? All those questions like, well, how are they doing discipline over there? And are they following kind of the same principles we do? And what influences such and such person? Like, it just gets complicated, doesn't it? In the world in which we live, and relationships are work every single day. And this can be a helpless feeling, an inability to control that part of our lives. And I can tell you that parenting keeps me very humble, and it keeps me very dependent on a Heavenly Father. Bottom line is, parenting is work. And if we are not careful, we will seek to kind of get the easy way out. There's a lot of different names for the easy way out. There's images that we're going to show you that kind of fit these styles of parenting that are kind of the easy way out. Some call it, like, there's the ostrich approach, that you just keep your head in the sand and hope for the best. There's the helicopter approach of parenting, that you're always hovering above, ready to drop in and meet the needs or correct or save the day. Whatever needs to happen, you're always kind of hovering there, waiting for something that needs to be addressed. There's the kind of delegator approach, that I'm going to use other people to raise my kids. I'm going to use daycare, and I'm going to use school, and I'm going to use church, and I'm going to use teachers, and I'm just going to delegate my responsibility to the coach or the grandparents. There's the designer approach to parenting that if I just provide my child with the best of everything, their needs will be met, and they'll grow up okay. There's the warden approach, which is kind of how I grew up, that there's a very tight ship. There's a drill instructor approach to parenting. There's the daytimer, where you're just trying to balance schedules, fit the kids into my calendar. There's the limo approach that we all go through, that life's just about activities and shuffling my kids from place to place, and are we going to get to the next practice, and how do we balance everything? All different approaches to parenting, and here's the struggle. The scriptures do not provide for us a particular method or philosophy. The Bible is not a how-to book on parenting. It doesn't lay it out whether you should use time out or whether you should spank or whatever it is. The Bible just doesn't give us the how-to, does it? But what it does give us are principles. What it does tell us is that relationships with our kids are work, that God-honoring parent requires work. Whatever your approach to parenting is, I can tell you, it requires effort, work. So there's two principles of parenting that are essential to what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to go to Deuteronomy 6 today and walk through this text together, Deuteronomy chapter 6. These are very simple principles, but again, they're relevant to all ages, all investment relationships that you're making. If you're a grandparent or you're an uncle or an aunt, or if you just have friends with kids, if there's someone coming behind you that you are influencing or shaping, these principles are applicable. So we're going to go Old Testament today. I know for some of you are like, whoop, whoop, let's go Old Testament when we're talking about parenting. Doesn't the Old Testament say something about stoning rebellious kids, or whoop, whoop, isn't there something out there? We're going Old Testament, but not in that way. We're going to go Gospel Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 6 is Moses delivering his final instructions to the Israelite people before they cross into the Promised Land. It is basically one long sermon that has to do with a lot of different matters. This is one of my favorite passages when it comes to parenting. So what we're listening to is this kind of extended sermon from the mentor, the guide, the rescuer of the Israelite people. And so when he finally comes to kind of the end of their journey, he's got some stuff to say to them. And that's what Deuteronomy is. Deuteronomy chapter 6, let's just dive into the text together. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it. That you may, and here, and look at the sequence here, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son's son, so multi-generational, by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be long. So Moses says to these Israelites, who obviously was this congregation who is filled with parents, he says, look, there's some key things here. One, you've got to fear God. This word of fear doesn't mean like a trembling, I'm afraid of God. It means a holy reverence for God. It's an acknowledgement of who God is. And Moses says, if you will create, if you will instill in multiple generations this holy reverence for God, this acknowledgement of who God is, then the response of that will be obedience to the commands of God. That's gospel. When you recognize who God is, acknowledge who God is, the natural worshipful response to that is obedience to God. And so Moses is saying, instill in the coming generations this holy awe, this holy reverence, respect, regard for who God is. And if you will do that, the response to that will be worship. It will be obedience to the commands and statutes of God. And then I love how he ends this phrase. He says, and this will end with this promise, with this reward of long days on earth. Teach fear of God to your children and your children's children. The parental responsibility is to pass a holy reverence for God to our children, who in return obey God and reap the benefit of living for God. A long life on earth. So Moses starts out, right? Like, so teach your kids who God is. A reverence for God. Verse 3. Hear, I like that. Hear, that means listen intently. Hear, therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in a land flowing with milk and honey. Moses says, listen up. Hear me. Listen intently. Don't let this just be words bouncing off your ears. I want you to really hear me. I want you to listen and be careful to do what I'm saying here. You know the word that comes to my mind when I'm thinking about that? It's the word intentional. I have to listen and I have to be an intentional parent. I have to be careful to do. Intentional parenting. It doesn't just happen. It's intentional. It's relationships are work. Verse 4 and 5, he lays the foundation for us. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. This is the theme of the Israelite people. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. The foundation of obedience is who God is. We serve this one God, this unique God, this true God. And because of who he is, Moses says, love him with everything that you are. Because of who God is, when you see God for who he is, the response is to love him with everything that we are. So this is just kind of a side note. Gospel parenting, parenting based on the gospel, is very response driven. It is an act of worship. It is recognizing who God is, and when I recognize who God is, my response to that is to love God with everything I am and to pass that on to those that God has placed into my line, into my lineage. It is my responsibility to love God with everything and then pass that to those who are coming behind me. But it begins with this acknowledgement, this God is one, God is unique, he is the one and only true God. I love him with everything that I am, and I pass that on. Like, that's what we can give our kids. Verse 6. Don't let me like say this again, like, don't forget that gospel parenting is worship. It's an act of worship, responding to who God is. Verse 6. And these words that I command you today shall be on your, where? On your heart. On your heart. The heart in the Jewish faith in that time was the center of life. It was the center of who you are, the center of your life. Let these things be who you are. Let it be the center of who you are. Faith is a 24/7 reality. It is not a Sunday only. It is not a piece of the pie. It is the pie. It is not the spoke on the wheel. It is the hub of the wheel. Internalize your faith. Moses doesn't give grounds for my faith is a part of me. What Moses says, no, is your faith is you. Everything about you must be grounded in the gospel. It's not just, hey, this is our church piece of the pie. This is our, we go to church at this part of our lives. It's not just the spoke on the wheel. I can tell you why one of the reasons why droves of young people are walking away from their faith is because we have made faith a piece of the pie. And it can be dismantled, and it can be ruined, and then we can throw our hands up and say, why do I need that piece? It was awesome for my parents, but I don't need that piece. No, we have to make faith the pie. We have to make it the entire wheel, that everything we do in life is lived out through the lens of who God is, through the gospel. Verse 7, specific instructions. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be frontlets before your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Like Moses gives them specific instructions for those parents, impress them, teach them diligently, talk about them, walk, tie them, write them. In the everyday of life, give them these principles. That means it's in between the walls, as we talked about last week. It is in the everyday. It is in the marathon that we call life. It is in the slog of everyday life. As I am living out my life in the grind, that I am putting my faith before my kids. I'm living it out, and that requires work. Let me break this down as simply as I know how. There's just two primary instructions in this entire text. One, talk it. Talk it. Talk it. This phrase, teach them diligently, you know what it actually means in the original language? It means to inscribe on something. You know what it means to inscribe something? Like you probably have something around your house that's got some type of inscription on it, something permanent, either in metal or stone, or you've seen trees where people's names were there. Or my parents used to go to this same campground and on this wooden bridge out over the lake. They would go and my dad had carved, he and my mom's, you know, initials in this little heart, and every year they'd put a little mark there. It wasn't going away, it was permanent. It was inscribed, and that's the phrase that's used here, inscribe it. Penetrate it, sharpen it. The engraver, as he labels over his monument, is the image here, until this permanent inscription is left. It is the name in concrete. And the writer of Deuteronomy, Moses speaking, says, inscribe on the hearts of your children God things. How? We talk about it. When? When we're sitting at home. When we're walking in the way, when we're walking along the road. In other words, Moses is saying, talk continually about God in everyday life. Don't make it a Sunday thing. You talk about God in the everyday, between the walls, sitting at the dinner table. In those strategic moments of life, you talk about God. Inscribe it on their hearts. I like to say it's inside and outside the walls. Inside the walls of my house, we want to talk about it. Outside the walls of my house, we want to talk about it. We want to talk about it at home. We want to talk about it in the car. We want to talk about it in the store. We want to talk about it at the ball game. And notice the language here is very conversation oriented. It's not just like I'm going to pour down lectures on my kids until they get it. It is conversation in the everyday. Look for teachable moments. For you and for them. When I discipline my kids, I want it to be an opportunity to teach them about grace and forgiveness. I know some of you are like, when I teach them discipline, I'm going to teach them about the wrath of God. Yeah. I've had those moments too. I want to teach my kids in the everyday moments of life about the gospel, about who God is, about the walk that it means to follow Jesus. In our modern day culture, when it comes to something as simple as school issues, how do I talk to them about morals? How do I talk to them about bullying? How do I talk to them about valuing other children, the image of God created in other children? Like I'm having conversations with my kids I never had to have. And I can pretend, I can be an ostrich parent and stick my head in the sand. Or I can do what Deuteronomy says here. I can talk to them about the everyday. You know, my kids come home and say, Dad, I've got a friend that believes this or does this or behaves in this way or is claiming he or she is this. What am I going to do? Am I going to stick my head in the sand? Or am I going to have that engaging conversation to say, what does the gospel say? What does it mean to look through the lens of Jesus in this conversation? What does it mean to have that dialogue? What does the Bible tell us about this situation in this moment? Can I let you in on something? They will seek out answers from some source. It may be peers. It may be teachers. It may be TV. It may be the music they're listening to, but they will seek out answers from some source. Be diligent to talk it. Talk and teach. Here is the key to talking it, though. Where does he ground this? Love the Lord your God with everything you are. Inscribe it on your heart. The only way I can talk about it as a parent, if it's on my heart. I talk about what is the center of my life. And if God is not the center of my life, if living for Jesus, if following Jesus is not the center of my life, I'm not going to talk about it with my kids. Or they're not going to listen to it. It starts with us, right? Acknowledging who God is, loving God with everything that we are, so that we might instill that in the coming generation, that we might walk it or talk it. And then the second one is that, it's walk it. We're going to talk it, we're going to walk it. We're going to teach it, we're going to model it, we're going to live it. It must be a reality in your life. So many of us grew up in a generation that said, hey, do as I say, not as I do. I'm telling you, that doesn't work anymore. It really didn't work then. Our kids, it's not do as I say, not what I do. That's not parenting. We have to do it. We have to model it. We have to walk it. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, who you are speaks so loudly, I cannot hear what you're saying. Who are you? If the truth of God, if the gospel is written on your heart, it impacts your walk, it impacts your life, and in return, it impacts the walk and life of your children or your grandchildren or your nieces, nephews, the people that God has in your life. If the gospel is written on your heart, it impacts your walk, which will impact the walk and life of those that God has placed in your sphere of influence. So here's the penetrating question. What are we teaching our kids from our life? What does my life say about Jesus? What does my life say about forgiveness? What does my life say about the church? What does my life say about grace? What does my life say about gossip? What does my life say about talking about people or cutting people down? What does my life say about how my kids will respond to people of a different social status than me, of people who are a different race than me? What does my life say to my kids about those issues? What does my life say? Because they're watching and they're learning from your life. What does my life say about following Jesus? What does my life say about being a friend? What does my life say about being a spouse? Make the things of God a consistent and regular part of your life. I mean, Moses goes so far here as he says, wear it, display it, display the word. Now, he's not talking about Christian t-shirts. Now, he's not talking about whatever plaques you have in your home that have a Bible verse on them. He's not talking about, well, I'm okay because I put up in my house. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Like it's right there on the wall. That's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about what's sitting on your coffee table in a 5x7 cube. He's talking about, am I living out my faith in the everyday? Now, I can tell you the Jewish people took this literal. They wore things on their wrists. They wore it in front of their eyes. If you look at kind of Orthodox Judaism, they lived out this in a literal way. But that's not what Moses is talking about. He's talking about this is a guide for how we live life at home, at school, at work, with my family, with my friends. Am I making the things of God a consistent and regular part of my life? What's his primary point? Saturate your life with the things of God. Give them the word and live the way of God before them. Be the gospel. Talk it. Walk it. And that requires work. It requires time. Quality time, quantity time. Like, don't buy into the misnomer. Well, I don't have a lot of quantity time, but I got quality. There is no quality time without quantity. Do what it takes. Put in the time. Make the effort, turn off the TV, whatever it takes, put in the time to do the hard work. They are too valuable. It is too important. Remember, it is far easier, do not miss the statement, it is far easier to build a child than repair an adult. It is far easier to build and shape a child than it is to repair an adult. Some of you are adults that are being repaired, right? Because of what happened growing up. You're in need of repair. You're broken because no one shaped and molded you as a child. Like that, our calling as parents to saturate ourselves with the gospel. I don't want to wake up and my kids are grown and I don't know them. Or they hate God. or they hate the church, or they hate me, and I was too consumed or too busy to even notice. Talk it. Walk it. You heard the song playing at the beginning. Harry Chapin's Cat, The Cat's in the Cradle. The entire song was written about a father who doesn't have time for his son. You know what happens when the son grows up? He doesn't have time for the father. Catchy tune, very surreal lyrics. A father who didn't invest in his son. And when the son grows up, he has no time for the father. One of the most popular verses, and I'll end with this, on parenting is Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. And remember, everything in Proverbs is a principle, so this can be not applied as 100% guarantee every time. It's a principle about life, a principle that kind of governs most of life. But Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, we've all heard this verse. We've been in any length and time in church. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And the thing I want to point out about this verse that sometimes we miss is that word train. You know that word train there? That word train in the original language means to rub the gums for an infant who's preparing to nurse. So in that day and age when a child was born and they were trying to get that child to latch onto the mother's breast to nurse, they had this practice of taking liquid and nursing the gums of the child and getting the gums ready so that the child would want to nurse from the mother. They would shape and mold and prepare the gums to nurse from the mother. And that's the word that he uses here, to rub the gums to prepare an infant for nursing. It is an image that has to do with intimacy. Intimacy that leads toward life. A child, this is before the days of formula and bottles and all those things, a child in that day and age, if they did not nurse, they potentially would die. And this word is a word of intimacy that is equipping this child to live. Because if they don't nurse, they potentially can die. So the instruction of Proverbs is, the principle of Proverbs is, shape and develop your kids in a way that leads them toward life. It is a word of warmth and celebration and affection. Parenting is not out of the box. It is in the everyday leading them. Applying love and affection and warmth to their gums so that they might live unto God. Let me end with this. And remind you, as I do every week, of the grace factor. You're not going to get it right every time. I don't get it right every time. Here's my reality. I've got three kids now that are close to adults. Two of them might argue they are adults, but not in daddy's heart. But three kids that are close to adult age. One that's a newborn and three that are close to adults. If you don't know me or my story, then I'll just have to explain that to you later. But three kids that are close to adults. And I can tell you, as a dad, listen, my talk wasn't always consistent. I tried to talk it, but I can tell you, sometimes I stuttered and sometimes my talk wasn't consistent with what they saw. I can tell you, as a parent, I tried to walk it, but you know what? A lot of times I stumbled. You with me? I tried to talk it, but sometimes my actions talked so loud they couldn't hear what I was saying. Sometimes what I was doing didn't match up with what was coming out of my mouth. I tried to walk it, but there's a lot of times I stumbled in the process and had to pick myself up or had to be picked up many times. And I could encourage them to walk it behind me, but they would fall like I would fall and they would stumble like I would stumble. I seek to be a dad to invest in their kids, to talk it and walk it, knowing that as I seek to talk it, there's going to be times times I blow it. As I seek to walk it, there's going to be times that I stumble. So my role as a parent is not just to do the things that we've been talking about. My role, my ultimate role as a parent is to invest in my kids in a way that says to them, your dad will let you down. Your dad will disappoint you. Your dad will stumble along the way. But there is a heavenly Father who will not let you down, who will not disappoint you, who will not fail you even when I do, whose word rings true every single time, who will not stumble, who will not falter, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That's the gospel. I don't want my kids' eyes to ultimately be on me. I want my kids' eyes to ultimately be on Jesus, because he will not disappoint or fail them. Amen. But you know how that's going to happen most effectively? Is the way that I parent. You're not off the hook just because you're going to stammer at times and stumble at times. It pushes us more to the gospel. It pushes us as parents to fall more deeply in love with Jesus, to know who God is, so that everything in me, my heart, my soul, my life, reflects Jesus to those who are coming behind me. And when that happens as a parent, then I can cry out to Jesus, Jesus, they're yours. I'm pushing them to you. I'm doing what I can do to push them to you. But ultimately, they're in your care. They're in your hands. And you are the Father that will not let them down or fail them. It's gospel parenting. Push them toward Jesus. Aren't you thankful for the grace factor? That God will step into the gaps. That Jesus will pick us up when we fall. That he will establish us when we are weak. And he will enable us as we lean into him to guide those who have been trusted to our care. Trust Jesus and point the precious, precious, valuable humans that we call kids, point them to Jesus. He's their ultimately heavenly Father. Will you join me in this? Like, can we do this together? Like, this is a thing that as families we have to walk with each other and pick each other up and hold each other's hands as we take this journey. They're too valuable. Would you agree with me? Like, they're too valuable not to do this. Let's be gospel people. Relationships are work, but they're worth it. Relationship with God, worth it. Relationship with your spouse, making them your highest human priority, worth it. Relationship with kids, teach them diligently by the way, inscribing it on their hearts, walking it, talking it, worth it. Because in the end, are those things that bring the ultimate satisfaction, fulfillment, joy, and meaning to life.